the NFL podcast. Needs to take a vacation.
Oh my God, yes. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined in a room filled with heroes. Chris Wessling to my left, Greg Rosenthal to my right. What's up?
Hey, Dan.
Boys. And a very special guest, as teased on Monday's show, her first time here in Studio 66, NFL Network's own MJ Acosta. Welcome.
Ooh, thanks, guys. Welcome. I didn't think I was going to make it.
Well, what a journey it's been. We're taping this. One of the latest shows we've ever done on a non-football playing night. Probably the latest. This is history. But that's how badly we wanted Acosta in the studio. Think about
also,
that.
Also, you already teased it, so.
Yeah, we were kind of locked in.
It's next level professionalism to come straight from the airport, though. That is a level that, you know, frankly, many of your colleagues wouldn't do.
I'm all in.
And let's also, MJ, delayed flight, comes straight here, and she's dealing with airport stuff. Your most recent tweet, as of this taping, I will never understand people who yell at a gate agent because the flight is delayed. What exactly do you think your temper tantrum will do to help the situation? Hashtag rude, frowny face.
There was a literal three-year-old right next to him, so well-behaved, waiting patiently, and this grown man had to go just like berate this gate agent who had just walked up. She probably didn't even know that the flight was delayed.
This is good, though,
grinds
because usually, again, as someone that works in television for sports, usually we're used to on Twitter, Greg, like people tweeting, oh, hey, United, you really screwed the pooch
right
on this one. Maybe you could help me out. No, that's not what MJ
here,
does.
Let everyone else know your problems.
Right.
That will solve
MJ is more putting people on blast that are just inappropriate.
There was no reason. This poor woman was standing there, and she to her credit, he walked away, and she's like, I'm sorry you're having a bad day, sir.
Ooh.
Like,
that's
a better human than
that,
me.
That's similar to the person who goes crazy on the waiter or waitress when it's not the waiter,
right,
if it's not the waiter or waitress's fault, and they're giving you fine service, but
right,
they just take it out on them.
That's the number one red flag for me if you're dating someone.
Oh,
if they are rude.
Yeah,
yeah, how they treat service people is the number one.
You know what that is?
What's that?
La Raville.
It is, absolutely.
Magnifico.
Perfect.
What grinds my gears the most is I'm a father of two young boys that who were babies not very long ago, and we have to fly across the country a lot because my family lives in New York. And what happens is sometimes the babies get upset and they cry. The people get mad at the parents because the baby is having a rough little stretch, which I understand it. I've been on the other side of it that – you're just trying to get – you're in a small tube.
There's no one who wants the baby
yeah
home more than
exactly
the baby's parents.
And then I still – people on Twitter, always without kids, of course, to this day are like, oh, I hate people who bring babies on airplanes.
You're going to leave the kid behind unattended.
You're a monster.
Yeah.
Someday you too will have children.
You too.
I feel bad for those kids. That's the truth. Yeah. MJ Acosta in the house. MJ, you have a great backstory. We're going to get to a lot, including that. What are we going to do today? MJ, NFL Network, about a year now almost.
Almost a year. Man,
yeah.
It comes at you quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you cover the Bay Area teams, the Niners and the Raiders, other stuff too,
yeah,
but primarily there. So we figured on today's show, we're going to ask the big questions about Bay Area football. And I'm holding in my left hand an old school NFL helmet. I stole it off someone's desk. It's very quiet
sweet
at NFL media right now. Yeah, I borrowed it.
We know Andy Fenelon doesn't listen to this podcast anymore, but I'm going to call it out.
I hope to remember to return it, but if I don't, I'm holding it. Inside it is questions. We've all written questions about the Raiders and about the Niners. We're going to go around the horn picking questions at random and answering them. That's going to be fun. We're going to do some news as well, but before we get to that, yes, MJ, you have a great story. I just learned this, by the way, that you are a New York City native.
Yeah, I grew up in Washington Heights.
Like Manny Ramirez, who we brought up somewhat recently.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you are a Yankees fan, which is great.
Totally a Yankees fan.
As am I. And you're known for your great hair as well, like me. So we got this really
so
a lot in common right now. But yeah, a great story, and you kind of you got into sports, but you kind of did it at your own pace, right?
Totally.
It wasn't something that you aspired to initially. It took a while to get there. Your Your family was from the Dominican Republic, New York. They moved to for a better life. You end up in Miami, and then your journey kind of begins after a stint as a Miami Dolphins cheerleader as well.
It was in tandem, actually, with my time with the Dolphins, because I was already a sports reporter by the time I finally made the team, because I tried out for the Dolphins like five times.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
We're jumping in the fish tank. That's good.
So it's a pretty lengthy process to become an NFL cheerleader for most teams. It's like 3 weeks of like auditions and camp and interviews and all this stuff. And so every year that I'd try out, I'd make it all the way to finals and then get cut right before. Soul crushing.
Oh,
truthfully.
Man. So five times.
So after my fourth audition, I was like, you know what? Let me focus on school. At that point, I had finally figured out that journalism and broadcasting is what I wanted to pursue. I went in, finished my degree, started working, and there was just this little tug that said, man, if you don't try this at least one time, you're going to hate yourself. And sure enough, winner, winner, chicken.
You got it.
On the fifth try. And so it was interesting because.
So who do we have to blame? Joe Philbin? Parcells?
No, it was what it was. It's hyper competitive in Miami. There's a million talented, beautiful women. It's really hard to make that team. It's similar, you know, all of the directors I worked with were former Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. So they kind of ran it, the audition process anyway, very similar to how they did in Dallas. So it was like you had hundreds of thousands of women come out every year. It's really tough.
What's like one thing that people wouldn't know about being a professional cheerleader that you could share with us?
Oh, man. So I always like to say it's a part-time job with full-time responsibilities. I was working full-time as a reporter and then running on over to the facility at night, and we'd practice 4 hours a night, 4 to 5 times a week. I was in the best shape of my life by default, right? But I think it's the time commitment, how long you're actually there, how much time you're putting into it, the hours upon hours of practice with these other women. It's really, really taxing.
Did you find that was an advantage at all as a reporter, that people almost took you too lightly? It's like, okay, now you arrived, and much like you've done here at the NFL Network, you've stomped on all your competition, jumped to the top of the ladder, and now you're going to the top.
Made enemies everywhere. Just no. It doesn't matter.
An advantage
going to the top.
In what sense?
I mean, just that they knew you were doing the cheerleading thing while you were being a reporter.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, there was that, like, can't take her seriously. And to that, I'd say I'm so over the narrative that you can't be feminine and fun and equally intelligent and qualified to do your job. I mean, I was a Dolphins cheerleader and I had the best seat in the house for every home game. So I recently told the story. It was interesting on game days to be on the sidelines, and your role is to cheer on the team no matter what, right? That was our job. So it was really tough for me as like a football person to not react to like a bad call or,
right.
Like, oh, you're not going to call that ref, and, you know, just smile there. So that took a bit of a learning curve.
Really like the whole Chad Henne era, I would feel like would be tough.
We have a lot of listeners who are college age and wonder about getting into sports, if it's worth it, how to go about doing it. But we also have listeners in their mid to late 20s who are thinking, is it too late to get into sports? And I think the four of us on this show, and you share this in common, you didn't know at 18 years old that you wanted to
absolutely
do this.
Absolutely not. I was a business major at 18 years old, and I'm not very good at math, which is why I speak for a living. But it took me some time and a lot of trial and error and a lot of L's to figure out that this was my path. And actually, my love for dance was what finally led me to a job in television. And that's when it was like that epiphany. Wow, I really love this. And I'd go in and I'd head up to Master Control and I'd talk to the producers and I'd just ask the hosts while they were getting their makeup done, like, hey, can I pick your brain a little bit? And at that point, I was probably 23, 24. Still hadn't finished, I had an associate's degree, but that was it. So at 25, I went back to finish my bachelor's, and all of my other peers in journalism were already in their first media markets, and I'm like, I'm trying to finish this media law class and pass it. But you know what? It gave me so much more of an appreciation for the process, for what I was doing. I was not wasting time at that point. I was like, how many credits do I need? I need to go. And I think because I was a little older and had that perspective. I was able to get a job before I graduated, about a semester or two before I graduated, and was kind of balancing all of it at the same time, which was interesting. But it's like once you know and you're set on it, but there was no way at 18 I would have known.
Well, that would be the only advice that I would ever give to anybody. Like, we have younger listeners that reach out to us, is that – especially, you know, certainly in my case and all of our cases, you don't have to figure out everything in your 20s. You actually have that decade to kind of eventually get on a path. So never stress out if you're 23, 24, 25,
and 26. Relax. You don't need
take
to
know. You've got 44. A lot of time.
And
it's a long career.
The next move that you make or the next decision you make isn't like for the rest of your life.
Right.
Try different things.
It's always going to change.
Just like MJ did, who ended up in San Diego, covered the Chargers, and now here she is at NFL Network and – in the studio at the Around the NFL podcast. Now you've reached the pinnacle.
That's it. This was the goal, man.
let's do some news.
Coach Belichick would probably say something like, you know, we're not on the program of making these kind of things right now. You know, it's National Football League. This isn't Hollywood.
That's pretty good.
That was amazing.
That's deep exhales in between.
He really nailed it because he did the nose snort at the end where he sucks in. And that's like everyone who has a Belichick impression does it wrong, just kind of does this monotone. It's Edelman forever now.
I'm just saying that
was pretty good.
If you're trying to place a Belichick impression, do break out your old Christian Slater impression, which is far off. All right, let's get into the news, and we'll start with some bad news for a franchise, Wes, that bad news always seems to follow them, the Cincinnati Bengals. First-round pick Jonah Williams will likely miss the entire 2019 season. This is a guy that was slated to be the team's starting left tackle, picked 11th overall. Instead, he underwent left shoulder surgery on Tuesday to repair a torn labrum. 21 years old, expected to make a full recovery, the Bengals added. So, you know, he's a 2020 and beyond prospect. But as far as this year, there will be no impact. And Bengals head coach Zach Taylor had described Williams after he set out mini camp as being, quote, dinged up. But after seeing the doctor, it turned out obviously much worse. Wes, as a recovering Cincinnati Bengals football fan, as you put it, this one has to sting for people back on the west side of Cincinnati that were looking forward to an improved offensive line this season.
Yeah, they're snake bitten when it comes to rookie first-round draft picks. If you've been on Twitter in the past couple of days, you've probably seen the list. Basically, Billy Price, last year's first-round pick at center, started 10 games and was well below average as a center. And he was by far the biggest impact of any first-round rookie the Bengals have
had. Here's the numbers. Jonah Williams, probably zero. Billy Price, 558 snaps. John Ross, 17 snaps as a rookie in 2017. William Jackson didn't play a snap. Cedric
Ogbuye,
65. Darqueze Dennard, 62. Eifert played 673 back in 2013. Kevin Zeitler played a full season. Drake Kirkpatrick way back 2012, only 42 snaps. So this has been something that's been going on forever.
This is a team that needs a lot of questions to be answered in their favor. And this is a question that will not – the offensive line is not going to be answered in their favor now.
It's such a Bengals thing to happen. The guy who like seemed like – quote unquote, the safest pick possible, who played more snaps than anyone else in college, and he's not going to play at all his rookie season.
I feel bad for him as well. Just to start, it's not how you want to start off your professional career. I mean, yeah, he's young, he's 21, he's going to make a full recovery, but you hear so many of these guys first entering the league, man, it's all about that change of pace, you know, from college, how much the game is going to slow down for you after your first season, and now he's got to wait a whole year.
They have a pretty good left tackle in Cordy Glenn there to play, but now they have Bobby Hart at right tackle, which is a problem.
They also, this brings me back to Kajana Carter all the way back in the 90s. They drafted number one overall, blows out his ACL in August. They drafted a guy named Kenny Irons at running back from Auburn in the second round, blew out his ACL before he even started. The Bengals just seem to have a lot of these guys who get injured before they ever get a chance.
And it's a domino situation because, yeah, Glenn was supposed to kick over to guard. And if he took to that position, that would strengthen that and left tackle if they hit on the pick. But now that all hits. You hit the pause button. Let's move on. I got a lot of tweets over the last, I'd say, two or three months about all or nothing. Now, if you remember last year's season, which chronicled the
Cowboys?
Was it Cowboys last year? No. Was it?
Yeah.
Last year, it dropped during draft week, and we hadn't heard anything about All or Nothing, the Amazon series, this spring. Well, we found out today that it is going to be back, and it will be covering the 2018 Panthers. For people that aren't aware of the All or Nothing, it's excellent. It's another great NFL Films production, and it's basically Hard Knocks taking you through an entire season. The Panthers, of course, last season got off to a 6-2 start, and then things kind of fell apart. They lost 7 in a row at one point, finishing 7-9. And it will be kind of be a season remembered, MJ, as Cam Newton's shoulder injury, which they hoped was going to – he was going to turn the corner. It just never happened. And eventually he had surgery, got shut down. So there, the nice little trailer for All or Nothing. You going to be watching this as
so
a football junkie?
I'd watch the trailer now, you know, especially with – Hard Knocks following one of the teams that I'm assigned to, and I saw a lot of similarities there, right? So there was one line that Cam said in it, and I'm not sure if it's because him and AB have worked out together before, they have sort of a friendship, but he said that line, look good, play good, get paid good. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, to a lot of players,
look good, play good, play good,
and
feel good.
Too much, but it's something that AB said to me when I interviewed him right after he was introduced in Oakland. So it's like, huh, okay, interesting. The parallels there. I mean, this will drop before Hard Knocks starts in August. So, but I will be watching. I love these kind of behind the veil.
Episodes premiering July 19th on Amazon Prime.
I think All or Nothing's underrated. The format's a little tricky because you already know what's going to happen, obviously.
Right.
And just the fact that too many of the episodes are just, here's game one, here's game two, and then the next week is, okay, 3 and 4. And they do better when they kind of mix it up and then they have themes. But if you're willing to watch it, and I've watched both seasons, I think it's only been two, right?
The Cardinals and Cowboys.
Three.
Cardinals
Rams,
and the Cowboys.
Rams,
oh,
yeah, the Rams, Cardinals, Cowboys.
Yeah, and I've watched it, and they each have had some unbelievable, genuine behind-the-scenes moments that rival or beat anything from Hard Knocks. I think you have to sift through it a little bit more, but there are things that I took away from the Cowboys, from the Rams ones that were better than anything that you would see on TV throughout the whole year. I'm looking forward to this.
I love this stuff. You know, I write the Hard Knocks reviews on NFL.com, and I've written these pieces as well. It's just where it falls in the year, it kind of, I feel like it gets sometimes lost in the shuffle, but if you do love Hard Knocks, you should try this show. There's one aspect of the Panthers season that will be very interesting to see how they handle it. I talked to David Ealy, of course, our luckless in love desk editor downstairs, also big Panthers fan. MJ, he once bought a bottle of champagne right before Super Bowl 50 that he planned to celebrate with.
Brought it
to the newsroom. Shortly before this happened, his girlfriend broke up with him, and then the Panthers lost the Super Bowl, and then he ended up drinking the bottle of champagne alone in a hot tub.
Oh, wow.
Like, and if that sounds bad, then for the
Pretty
next
bad.
3 years running, a popular host on a podcast brings it up repeatedly over and over.
She meant a lot to him. That had to hurt. Anyway, he brought up to me, reminded me that 4 games into their losing streak, Ron Rivera, the Panthers coach, threw up the strategic equivalent of a Hail Mary as a coach. He demoted defensive coordinator Eric Washington, fired their D-line coach and the secondary coach, and they had a press conference, and it happened, obviously, after a discussion with Marty Herney, the GM, and the new owner, David Tepper. I wonder if we see all that, because Hard Knocks, everything's rosy typically. You know, the cuts and stuff is sad, but the optimism around the teams is always there. What happens when you have all the cameras around and you have to do dirty business like that? Do we get access to that? I feel like it's kind of what you sign up for when you do the show.
Since it's like a retrospective.
I feel like they've shown some stuff on All or Nothing. The Cowboys, when there was the national anthem, some of those moments was interesting. It kind of showed that Jason Garrett maybe didn't have that much power, that it's all Jones. That was surprising. The Case Keenum kind of, I feel like no one watched that season, but watching Case Keenum crumble a little bit during the Rams season as he lost his starting job and Jared Goff took it over was pretty fascinating. And they showed some stuff there that if I'm Case Keenum, I would not want to have watched. So I hope so. I hope they
John Elway didn't see that season either, apparently.
I'm looking forward to the just about mid-November epiphany that Riverboat has when he sees one of the strongest armed quarterbacks in the league can't complete.
Gonna do it.
He basically has a Keenum arm, or less than that, by November. And Rivera's sitting on a 6-2 team, and he has to just know at one point, we're not going to the playoffs because my quarterback can't pass.
I'm curious about the interaction of Cam and just like a little more Cam behind the scenes.
Cam and everyone?
Yeah.
I mean, just like how he interacts with his teammates and everything going into a season that kind of falls apart, like how much you see that. It could be interesting.
I want to see the wardrobe selection.
There you go.
Does he have a style? Oh, is it just him?
We're definitely going to be taken to his house and into the closet.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's going to happen. All right, moving on. Tyreek Hill, Kansas City Chiefs. What's going on there? Hill completed his meeting with NFL investigators in Kansas City on Wednesday regarding recent child abuse allegations against the Chiefs wide receiver. Hill met with Lisa Friel, the NFL senior VP of special counsel for investigations, and other league officials represented by his personal lawyer and an NFLPA lawyer, according to Rap Sheet. This was Hill's first interview with the league and a chance to answer to these allegations of child abuse. We've heard the local authorities are not pursuing a case at this time connected to the incident earlier this year. There's no timetable for a ruling on Hill's case, Rappaport added in his report. So we've talked about this, that what happens? What's next? Is Tyreek Hill going to be on the field with the Chiefs? How long will he potentially be out? Still, we don't know, but it continues to kind of hang over the franchise as we approach training camp.
Well, I think this was a significant step because it put kind of a – I don't know if it put a deadline, but it moved it forward. The NFL was basically saying until now, and Roger Goodell said that they were waiting for – his child services case to end before they would proceed. And now they're proceeding, and they met. And just little whispers, and you hear people talking around the newsroom or in just kind of reading between the lines of what Ian's saying. I think you're going to hear something from the league, whether it one way or another, well before training camp starts. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's, you know, sometime in the upcoming July 4th, you know, in the next couple of weeks, I think you'll find out whatever the NFL is going to decide. Right. How much more time do they need?
Hill is expected to report to the Chiefs for training camp when it begins on July 26th, barring a development that is unforeseen. Finally in the news, every year Emory University ranks the NFL fan bases, gets people fired up. Those people, you know, dummies over at Emory, because they know this is – if you want to get stoke the flames and get people talking on social media, you drop it on June 26th.
Right.
Smart.
Emory was like
college educated people.
Emory was like the school that I kind of wanted to go to, but I just figured like I probably wouldn't even get in, so I didn't even apply.
That's right.
It's cool.
If you got in, maybe you'd be involved with this project, which they rank the teams. And let's see, who is the top five? Number one,
the teams that are always on TV.
Cowboys. Number two, Patriots. Number three, Eagles. Number four, Giants. Number five, Steelers. Those are the top five. Anybody surprised
and
by those?
Sorry,
let me tell you why.
It was specifically the most popular.
This is what they use to figure it out. Okay?
Best fan bases.
What was the algorithm? Best fan base.
Here's the algorithm. I got the algorithm for you coming up right now, if I can find it. Here it is. The approach uses data on attendance, revenues, social media following, and road attendance to develop statistical models of fan interest.
Well, I think it's first helpful to realize that this is a professor of marketing.
Got it.
So he's putting a lot more stock in marketing than just about anything else. Mm-hmm. It's a little too close to Darren Revelle for me. But he's definitely going with volume over rate and quantity over quality.
The key is that the models are used to determine which city's fans are more willing to spend or follow their teams after controlling for factors like market size and short-term changes in winning and losing. So I gave you the top five. The bottom
– I mean, I think to Erica Tamposi is an example of why the Patriots have, you know, ranked so highly here. I think they deserve it.
Well, Yeah. I mean, a lot of winning, a lot of titles in that group.
I mean, they showed up. I mean, that was in the Super Bowl last year. They're dominating. You figure, okay, they've been to a lot of Super Bowls. That was like a home game for the Patriots.
I went to college in Boston in the turn of the 2000s, and that was the fourth most popular pro sports franchise in that city behind the Red Sox, the Celtics, and the Bruins. And that's fine. I'm not angry about it, but that just shows you how you build as a fan base through winning. Like, that was not a great fan base. It wasn't. Now it is. Congratulations. Let's see what happens if you don't win every year, Ricky.
I mean, I was watching when they weren't winning anyways back then, because some people are just football fans. Is it great? Do you get more bandwagon fans? Yeah, of course. But does your college experience get you the ranking of the fan base of the Patriots in New England? Mm. I don't know.
Oh. Yikes.
Ouch. Shots fired. The bottom five, by the way, let's see. Bengals, Jaguars, Titans, Chiefs, and Rams. Now, the Chiefs, how do the Chiefs end up down there?
I can't fathom.
I don't know about that.
I've been to Arrowhead, and it is insane.
That is a rabid fan.
Really bad on Twitter, though, I guess.
They only have one beat writer. Leave them alone.
That's crazy. I mean, the Browns were just out of that bottom five, too. One above it. They would have been 25th. And the Chiefs, I mean, those are as loyal fan bases as you can possibly find, despite not a lot of success.
Oh, how about this, MJ? I don't want to get you in trouble with, you know, up there north of us, but Raiders, Niners, you know, who's got the better fan base?
The more colorful, vivid,
and hamana.
Travel well, Raider Nation, without question. They're insane. Y'all have been to a game in the Coliseum, obviously. I don't have to tell you. It's a different world. They run
fevered
stuff over there. And having covered teams in SoCal for several years, anytime any other team plays Raiders, it's like,
yeah,
more Raiders.
There's no other fan base you could say, hey, we're leaving you for again.
Exactly.
But we're just going to like hang out for a couple years and then leave you.
The Raiders,
like, other places, imagine if you tried to do that in Boston supposedly. It'd be like, they'd just screw you.
Right. And the Raiders have been bad forever now. I mean, they've been a couple, you know, right spots, but the fans, they support him.
They really do.
They support
him. In full garb, I mean.
And what do they get for
it? The costumes are insane.
Team moves to a desert.
Exceptionally loyal.
They move to a desert.
The Chiefs thing is, that's preposterous.
Yeah. Come on, man.
I don't get that one.
That's La Ravio.
So, Emory University, La Ravio Magnifico. Whoa.
Well, this.
We're coming for you.
This particular marketing professor.
Okay. That's what's happening in the news. Professor Lewis, take it up with him, Wes.
Nah, he's all right. He doesn't need any more attention on his little ranking.
I'm glad I didn't apply. Emory.
Ducked a huge bullet there. All right, here we go. Let's get into it. MJ Acosta in the house. Oh, that's the other advice I would give. If you're going into sports, because you're bilingual,
yes,
MJ, what a huge advantage. I would say if you were looking to get into journalism, take Spanish. You know, that's got to be a huge help.
That was the number one benefit I had in being able to get a job right away. And I was able to stay in a larger market like Miami. I started off at a Spanish station doing sports and public affairs. And
don't take Latin. What is that? How's Latin going to help you? No. French?
Spanish was...
Let's calm down.
I mean, I was lucky. Spanish was my first language, but still.
But it's still helping you out. She does some work with our friend NFL UK Hank, Handsome Hank. What's the show during the season?
Trend Zone. Oh, and
Good
game
title.
Organized game and all that stuff. So
there you go.
She's tied in.
Anybody know how to speak Spanish here? Besides
I was trilingual when I was like 20 years old, and now I'm one lingual.
Try. What else do you have?
I took French and Spanish in high school.
Hey.
How fluent were you?
I was French club president.
That was a lot of trips to Huckapoo's ago.
Yes, it was. I was actively killing off brain cells.
All right, here we go. I hold in my hand a recreation of an old-time football helmet. Within it is 12 questions about the Bay Area football scene, and we're going to pass the helmet around. MJ, you are our guest, our bilingual guest. What a weapon to have in the industry. So I will start with you. You could use whatever language you feel.
Okay.
Pick a name. Pick a question out. If it's one of your questions, put it back in.
It's not one.
Otherwise, Read the question, you answer it, then we all can answer it, but okay. MJ will get us going.
What's more likely, 49ers defense or Raiders offense is most improved unit in the league? I would say 49ers defense is the more likely most improved.
Can I hear that one more time?
What's more likely, the 49ers D or the Raiders O is the most improved unit in the league?
What about this cross-section of segments here? Ooh. What's more likely, jumping into the helmet?
I would say 49ers, I don't know if that's allowed. Just because their lack of turnovers last season, lack of sacks, just statistically all around, they have no place to go but up. And they have fully reinforced that complete line, the secondary. Guys who were banged up are coming back healthy, God willing, for their sake. Mm. So I really do think that that's where we'll see the bigger improvement. If we're comparing those two.
I agree. The Raiders' offensive line still worries me quite a bit. And the 49ers added difference makers. Nick Bosa can be a difference maker if he's anything like his brother, D. Ford. Jason Verrett, who is a complete wild card, but was Pro Bowl caliber before all the injuries. And Quan Alexander, another guy coming off injury.
With a little bit of luck, that's as talented a front seven as there is in the entire NFL.
On paper, should be.
And Robert Saleh, who our guest Peter Schrager was talking up as kind
Schrag
of
a
riser, even though he hasn't really had results with San Francisco. Like, he should get if he's a great coach and this team's healthy at all, they should be a top 10 type of defense.
Okay. I'm with you guys. Go ahead.
Got Wes. Oh, we have another what's more likely.
Ooh.
Intense.
What's more likely? During the 2019 Raiders season, Derek Carr uses Twitter to address reports he is frustrated by John Gruden's coaching style, or Antonio Brown misses at least one game connected to a disciplinary action by the team.
Like a hardcore would you rather.
Okay.
Wait, you answer. That's right. I forgot you're not asking it. You're answering it, Wes.
I think it's more likely that Antonio Brown misses at least one game because what I've seen from him for the last, 10 months, he hasn't been a exceptionally sane human being. So he's unpredictable. Derek Carr, as much as he loves the block button on Twitter, is generally not controversial with his comments.
We also had Aditi Kinkabwala on our show at the owners' meetings, and she was inside that building. And she was open about it. She said that Antonio Brown had changed in a way that was troubling, is too strong, but it changed the dynamic of his relationship with his teammates and then eventually with the coach and the front office, leading to him leaving town. I do have a lot of questions. That's why I think it's more likely how that will work with John Gruden, who is a very strong personality as well, who, if they butt heads, Antonio Brown's probably not going to win that battle. So I would say that's more likely. What do you think, MJ? What has your opinion been, or what have you taken from your early interactions with Antonio Brown, if you've had any?
We have. I think it's more likely the Antonio Brown angle, only because I can't imagine Derek Carr.
He's the good soldier.
Blasting his coach.
Not blasting. He would be addressing reports.
Addressing a frustration.
It could even be just like, this is all BS.
Yeah. Oh, it could be a good thing.
Yeah, it could be like things are great with John, but there are reports out there that their relationship isn't too hot.
I mean, he's sort of already addressed those.
You're
something
saying he
more.
Has to do
right.
Carr.
That's what I think it's Carr. He's already done stuff like this.
I think I misread the.
But he has to do it on Twitter.
On Twitter. Okay. That does seem more likely to me, only because from what I've seen, and I'm only speaking in the context of from free agency to OTAs to minicamp, what I've seen from Antonio Brown thus far, it would appear that everything that he's doing is to prove I'm for real.
Honeymoon.
This is where I want to. Sure. This is where I want to be. We need a win, and I'm going to be the guy who's going to do it.
I think you're getting the best Antonio Brown, who's one of the greatest receivers of all time. He is motivated. He's going to be on his P's and Q's. And we've already seen Derek Carr on Twitter do something very similar just this offseason. I remember those eyes emojis when they were working out Kyler Murray. That was an interesting little moment. So I could see it happening.
I've talked about it on this podcast. Year two is when the Antonio Brown experiment could go sideways.
Early October.
Year two. Vegas, I don't know. We'll see how it goes there.
Week two.
All right, here we go. Raiders question. Does the Raiders game day theme song fit in Las Vegas? Now, this is interesting because I do not know what the Raiders theme song is. So
good.
MJ, can you sing it for us?
So it's more of a spoken word with like a really good beat.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's like the autumn wind.
Oh, that one.
That
John
one.
Facenda.
You guys
yeah.
know
oh,
which one yes. it is.
The autumn wind is a raider.
Yes.
Plundering what it wants. That whole thing? Yes,
that.
Classic. Can we play that, Ricky?
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash, with a silver hat about his head, and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
Does it still fit? Does it still go with the franchise in Las Vegas?
Well, what do they call
it? It's so synonymous with the black hole, with the Coliseum, with that game day feel.
What do they call that? A Zeppelin?
A Zeppelin.
I don't
or no, Soraka?
Not us. I don't
what
know.
What are these words?
It's,
I feel like you're just
it's,
making up.
It's a desert windstorm.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
It's a desert windstorm, I call it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you could still have a windstorm in Vegas.
I would think they have to. That's such a great part of their tradition.
Yeah.
But no longer is – you're right, though, because you're not coming in from the sea to plunder anymore.
Mm. They're trying to have their cake and eat it, too. Keep all the tradition. Keep all the Raiders
right.
stuff. You know, I am a little skeptical that you can pull that all off, but Raiders fans, it seems so loyal, I guess you can.
All right. Okay. Greg, he's got the old helmet. He's opening it up. See what the handwriting is. Oh, it's neat, so it can only be one person.
Who? Wes? I can't get this thing apart.
I folded it in like full pageant on stage question manner. That's not mine, I don't think.
No. Outside of George Kittle, which member of the 49ers offense scares opposing defenses? That's
George
it.
Kittle is terrifying. That is a
scares?
Superstar.
Scares.
He's fun to cover, right? Kittle
oh,
seems
yeah,
to be almost
yeah.
like a professional wrestler.
You know, I think it's yeah. a fair question that they don't have difference makers that you have to game plan for. I think Tevin Coleman's speed can scare it. I think Kyle Shanahan's, you know, running scheme can, but that's more of a scheme. I think Dante Pettis can certainly get better and maybe turn into that guy. Mike McGlinchey's like a run blocker you might have to worry about, but it's pretty much just George Kittle. You're counting on your coaching to make up for the lack of players that do scare you.
Did you mention
Kyle Shanahan's the answer, I think.
Right.
He's the one who scares defense.
Did you mention Jerick McKinnon?
I did not.
Is he just out of the – where
he's,
are we
he's
at?
He's back in the mix.
What's going on with Jerick McKinnon
well,
right
still,
now? Is he going to be a part of this
they
offense?
They took it real slow during offseason programs with him, just being extra cautious with that knee. But he's going to have – he has a much harder recovery just because of what he has to do in his role compared to Jimmy, who's also recovering from
– Somebody good is going to be inactive on game days, right? Between
right.
Breida –
Oh,
Kevin
in that backfield?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Juszczyk, and then Mostert is a special teamer, and he's coming off a major injury. Mm-hmm. So
McKinnon got paid a lot of money before he suffered that injury.
Yep.
Interesting. Plot line to watch. Trade.
I like it. Sell it, baby.
All right. NBA's up.
Will pro football work in Las Vegas? Most seem convinced that LA will be unwilling to support two NFL teams, but why should we think Vegas will support one?
Good question for MJ Acosta.
Well, I think you don't need to give people a reason to go to Vegas. Everyone's down for a trip to Vegas. And I think now coupled with game day action, I think it will work.
Mm.
I think it will.
Maybe, though. Like, I guess my take on it is
in a different.
We've heard
different
about this for years, and it was used. The Davises were trying to get the building built in Oakland. It just wasn't going to happen, and Vegas became what Los Angeles used to be, which was, hey, you better build our stadium or we're moving.
Right.
And they acted on it, which is a very Al/Mark Davis thing to do. But all this hand-wringing about the Chargers, and it's not unwarranted, about what are they going to do here? How are they going to fill up a, you know, a 75,000-seat stadium when they can't fill up 30,000? That's all fair. But I don't hear anybody saying, man, are the Raiders going to work in Vegas? And they're all in. They got a new building being built right now, too.
Because it's Vegas. It's the allure of Vegas.
Is it a football town?
The NFL sells itself. No. If you have a stadium, they're going to fill it.
It's a small town. Well, I don't think that's true of the Chargers.
They don't have a stadium.
Yeah. I am not worried. The answer to the question would be because of the Golden Knights. I think that the fact that the hockey team has been not just a success, but like a raging success where it's become a civic pride thing. Yeah, and they were good too. Yeah. But that's 40
different
dates a
though.
Year. It's 40 different. Dates a year, and they're filling it up. And there seemed to be – it was locals going, even though it's a very small market. It's immediately one of the NFL's smallest markets. There was enough kind of local pride that kind of jumped on board that you figure
maybe
eight
that carries
dates a year.
The day. Maybe because Raiders fans are so loyal, they travel and they make it a weekend of it. It could work if you squint the right way. But also, part of the reason why the Golden Knights thing works is that you could build it into your Friday night in Vegas where, oh, we'll go gambling, we'll go at the pool, then we'll hop over to the arena, which is right in the middle of everything, and then we'll continue our night. A football game is different. It starts early. It's you get to the stadium, you're there. I guess it's close to the strip, but it's not like right in the middle of everything. It's a different fan experience.
I'm thinking maybe they'll have some feature in the stadium like they do a la Hard Rock in Miami, where there's an actual literal nightclub inside of the stadium. So that something like that has to be incorporated in a Vegas thing. Give it the Vegas feel. I mean, people are legit with those foam glow-in-the-dark things and glasses on and, like, popping bottles at a 1 p.m. Miami Dolphins game.
Right.
So I would imagine they'll have something like that in Vegas as well.
Did you ever, as a former Dolphins cheerleader, did you ever meet Gloria Stefan?
I only saw her from afar.
Was the sound machine flanking her or protecting her from
no,
the masses?
No, there was a red carpet that led up to, like, to go into.
What about part owners Serena and Venus Williams?
Again, we did not.
How many other part owners?
How did the cheerleaders not get a chance to meet all the owners?
No, others did. I didn't.
Oh, that's not right. Acosta should have been in part of that. All right, Wes, he's got one in his hand. He's gonna.
All right,
lay it
this
out.
This is Dan's purview here. Who will be the breakout star of Hard Knocks?
Good question. Well, I think, the obvious answer is Gruden, just because that's who's going to be focused on the most. Think Rex Ryan in the 2010 Hard Knocks season. You know that they're going to hit that hard. Who would be the kind of like the sneaky breakout star? I don't know. Mike Glennon? Let's go home. Let's go to Mike Glennon's house.
I'm going to go Vontaze Burfict. I mean, there's so many guys that you would think the NFL would not want to be.
Wait, you
wouldn't
want to know what's going on behind the scenes with Mike Glennon? Because I do. personally.
I forgot Mike Glennon's there. The Glennon versus Nathan Peterman battle actually is kind of juicy. I think Vontaze Burfict is a lot.
I mean, the Richie Incognito thing will be interesting to watch. I'm curious how hard they're going to hit that. But that's out there. And then people will say Antonio Brown. If he's on his best behavior, he might be in good spirits. You know, he always has the extravagant training camp arrival.
It's going to be a lot of Brown.
What that's going to be. But the breakout star, I'm going to go with John Gruden just because I think it's a perfect match.
Who are we missing here?
This is so off the radar, you guys. I mean, this is just an observation from camp. Running backs coach Kirby Wilson is hilarious.
Nice. Great call.
Kirby Wilson. Did he?
Please watch him. He's hysterical. He has these one-liners. The things he shouts at the guys while they're running drills. I mean, a lot of times I have to remind myself, all right, girl, you got to watch the rest of practice because it's so entertaining. He's great.
I like that.
That's a great call because a classic Hard Knocks move is to focus in on a eccentric assistant coach and they become breakout stars. Remember the guy last year for the Browns with the belly when he said hut and the whole belly moved?
Yeah. That guy was
love that guy.
There's always a coach.
All right. I'm up. Okay. This is feminine handwriting. I'm going to guess this is from an MJ Acosta. It's an MJ Acosta joint. How will Kyle Shanahan split carries in this reinforced backfield? Well, we kind of hit on that a little bit, but I don't know. I mean, didn't we see so much last year after McKinney goes down? Didn't we see so much from Breida that he deserves?
And he played
the shot
banged up.
I mean, and he's still banged up, right?
Through. Yeah, yeah. He has a pectoral muscle strain situation there.
To me, he's the most talented runner on that team. The question is, do you want to give him more than 10 to 11 touches per week? And you have enough running backs where you can limit it.
Well, between the three of them, it should work out perfect because they've all had injury. They've had some issues. I mean, Tevin Coleman's generally been durable, but they'll probably take turns sharing the ball. That's
these
how
I kind of work themselves out too. The chances that all three are healthy.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want anybody to get
Breida
hurt.
Breida had to take the brunt of that load last season, bless the heart.
If I'd take one, though, it'd be Tevin Coleman. He's the one that's been with Kyle Shanahan before. And
you hated him last year.
I don't love him.
Want to do a sandwich prop on that one?
I don't, like, love him as a player, but I think he's going to get plenty of opportunity.
But he's a role player.
He's done it.
He's a role player. That's why he didn't get paid, even though he's going back to Shanahan.
All right, Greg Rosenthal up. We only have four questions.
Kyle Shanahan's 10-22 as he enters his third season with a third consecutive double-digit loss season. Cost him his job.
Who's answering this, Dan?
I am. Right. It's similar to another question that's sitting in there, which is I wonder like how much faith Jed York, the owner, has in this combination, because it seems like they're on the 6-year contract, that he loves them forever, and a season like this would test it. I think Kyle Shanahan would somehow survive it, which almost never happens. And that if I had to guess, that he would survive ahead of the GM, but I have no idea.
I would, if I'm a Niners fan, I would be worried that John Lynch, the GM, maybe he's not the guy. And if they have another tough season this year, they decide to clean house. And then Shanahan, who's a very bright mind, who maybe didn't get a fair shake here, goes somewhere else and becomes a big-time coach. And you just were a victim of timing on some level. The other side of it, MJ, is that, well, if he loses 10 games, 12 games, and let's say 11 games, maybe you've had enough time.
Right.
I don't care what the background
is.
And you just, it's time to go with someone else because you didn't get the job done in 3 years.
I think they do acknowledge, though, that last year was just crappy in terms of injuries.
Right.
You know, like, no one could have seen that Jimmy Garoppolo injury coming. And so much of his offense was to be built and kind of raised around Jimmy and what he was going to do with Jet, and losing both of those guys right before the season. I think maybe a mulligan, but I don't think there's such thing in the NFL. There's no mercy. But I do agree with Greg that if anyone can survive it, it would be him, but it would take some like craziness.
All right. One last time around the horn. Oh, MJ Acosta.
If that were the case, Kyle Shanahan might, for once, encounter just a little bit of doubt on this podcast.
Hasn't happened yet.
Has not happened yet. Hmm.
Is John Gruden a liability?
Oh, wow. Someone's cutting right to Greg. Nice.
Short and sweet.
No, I don't think he is a liability. I think we have yet to see what this team is supposed to be under him. I don't think that last year was the Gruden of yore that we remember and that we know. There were many times last year where I'd hear him in like post-game pressers, and he's like, well, it's going to get better. It's going to be fine. Because so passively, and I'm like, who are you? I think it was just a consequence of what it was, of that transition, of the season, of everything that was happening. But I can already see a shift back just even through this offseason in our interactions and conversations that we've had and in the press conferences that he's given. So I don't think he's a liability, but I do think that this year, similar to the Niners, it's like, all right, well, let's see it then.
I'm with you. Anybody that drew conclusions last year was both a misguided and a prisoner of the moment. He signed a 10-year deal. This was never going to be put back together in 1 year. Starting this year, though, I think it's fair to really take a look at whether he can do the job at this stage of his life.
We've seen some coaches make an instant impact when they really are ahead of the curve.
Totally.
Right.
Like Sean McVay, for instance.
He tore it down, though. He decided,
I don't know. To me, it's just it is a question, because on some levels, in terms of team building, he was a little bit of a liability in Tampa for about 5-6 straight years there. So that's a little bit of a – it's a it's a rec- it's a body of work.
But is he a liability right now? I don't think it's fair to say.
Okay.
It's premature to say that. It's also you can't say he's been an asset either.
Yeah, that's fair too.
Okay, all right, we're going to have to lean heavily on MJ for this answer. Do Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch get along as much as it appears?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Because I think that's if things did go squirrely this year for them, I feel like if that wasn't true, then that would come out, and it's like one survives or the other. But no, they really are on the same page.
I've seen them both on hand at the facility, outside of it, in just events centered around the team, but off campus, and you can't fake that funk, right? And I don't think either one of them
like
is,
that.
I don't think
cut that for a drop.
Is the type to be contrived in that sense. Like, I'm just going to smile and be cordial for it. Like, they're both hyper competitive, but I think that they're also on the same page.
That's a great sign. I kind of want to see one of these long-term plans actually pan out where, you know, there wasn't success so that other teams can point to it.
Has anybody pulled their own question yet? Are we pitching a perfect game here?
I could kind of tell which one's mine were, so I avoided it.
I can tell my own handwriting through the...
Oh, you've been... Yeah. Okay, that's kind of cheating.
I cheated.
I thought you said don't...
Well, wasn't,
don't
this wasn't a game.
No, well, you pull it out, and then if it's yours, you put it back. But you guys are looking...
I didn't know you were...
Well, why not save the listener that, like, enthralling 30 seconds of podcast?
All right, here we go. Two more. Wait, this one's stuck together. Good, too.
Oh, yeah. I really sealed mine like there's a Pope.
Why did you
not use post-it sex stuff?
This is enthralling as well. Great radio. Wes.
Right.
Do you use super glue on this thing?
I know. And he was like walking around all peacocking like, I put my questions in the best. You don't know
what you're talking about peacocking because I put
you were, questions you, in you walked past my desk. You were like,
he was pretty proud of himself.
He was like, I came up with this whole plan. I'm going to use the other side of the sticky. You don't know what you're doing.
That was true. Greg tells no tales. Another edition of What's More Likely? Vontaze Burfict and Richie Incognito are both week one starters, or at least one will not survive final cuts. Ooh, I like this one. Okay. First of all, good handwriting, Chris.
Thank you.
All right. So Incognito fills a huge need. Osemele left the team. They need a guard. He fits there as long as he can stay on the straight and narrow. He's a week one starter. Burfict, I don't know. Isn't Burfict kind of been in decline as a player?
Oh, he was one of the worst linebackers in the NFL last year. He couldn't run.
That seems like a toss-up at best, or at least one will not survive. I think it's more likely that Vontaze Burfict gets cut or Incognito does something dumb to undermine himself. So I will go with one of them will not survive.
Can I just point out that Richie Incognito is 36 years old?
Coming out of retirement.
And we've seen better guards, guys like Jari Evans, have to shut it down way before age 36.
These types of signings.
Good player last time we saw him. You're making a lot of sense, but he was
a productive player,
yes, in Buffalo.
Dan, you know, I know you had your rules that you were so excited about. What happens now? It's the last question left, and there's only one option, and it's mine.
Ooh.
I have to put it back in, and then the show is just over.
No, we have to stay here for eternity. Just
we
have to
live
freeze here.
Raiders fans and
Ricky
49ers.
Misses her flight. It'll be.
She's gonna miss it anyway.
Shield falls.
We've kind of covered this, but Raiders fans and 49ers fans, overrated, underrated, or properly rated? Answer separately.
Answer separately.
Well, you know, you can't group them together.
All right. I'll start. Niners fans properly – excuse me. Raiders fans properly rated as being badasses. Our buddy Scar, listener of the show. Like guys like that, that no matter what happens, they dress up like maniacs. They cheer. They fill up a dump of a stadium. They fill that place out, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that place has raw sewage flowing through it half the time, and they will
fill up your mentions, too.
Well, I've gotten more death threats from Raiders fans than the rest of the 31 teams combined.
See, I use that as a positive. Niners, I feel like there's a difference between the Candlestick era Niners fans or how they're perceived and now at the Levi's Stadium, the big bell bottom. I feel like they kind of take a bad rap now that maybe they don't deserve. They didn't decide to build the stadium up in like Washington or whatever it is now. So I'll put them properly rated too, or maybe slightly kind of they get a bad rap and it's not their fault.
I like 49ers fans. I don't think they're as crazy, like psychopathic, as some other fan bases, but they know what they're talking about. They're very educated on their team and football.
And I have a high sports acumen for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think 49ers fans are underrated. Actually.
I agree with that.
Even within the Bay Area, they kind of – because
– they get overlooked a little.
Because the Raiders fans are so overpowering, I think that the 49ers fans do get a little bit of a bad rap there.
A little spoiled, you know. Had a lot of success.
Mm-hmm. Long time ago. They had a nice run there last
– Not filling up that stadium.
I mean, the stadium's neither like, is what, the an hour and a half away from the city?
Like, it's like an eternity.
They also had to address the sunlight issue, which was a killer, right? They had to build like a – like in Miami almost. They had to build some type of tent around it.
Like a little awning.
Come on. How much are you getting paid to build the stadium? You got to get these things right.
They do that on purpose, though, don't they?
What?
To make sure that the sunlight hits the opposing team.
That's dastardly. Mm. MJ, you came in and you said it all. You've done it.
There's nothing else.
You got off a plane that was delayed. You dealt with – well, you didn't deal with them, but you saw unruly people at the airport and you desecrated them as you should. And
I have to remember I work on TV because I don't want to end up on a viral video. Like,
no, you got to be smart.
Telling somebody off at the airport for being rude, then I'm the rude one.
Mm. We loved having you, and we'd love to have you back.
You're like
I would love to.
You're the least likely NFL network analyst to have like a Britt McHenry moment.
I think it's
a point of pride now.
Yes. Like in Vegas, connected to your team, you would be at the bottom of the board.
Right.
Which is the place to be.
Which is great.
You know, that's where you want to be. Okay. So, that's it. That's it for this week's shows. We'll have one very special show, 4th of July week, the return of really a renowned, extremely popular game show. I would say the number one game show in the podcast game.
Speaking of overrated. This game.
Greg tries to get off the schneid. We won't say what it is. Did we say what it was on Monday?
No.
We didn't say. Could be any game show.
You could figure it out, though, based on Greg's demeanor, what it is, probably. MJ, thank you again.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, MJ.
All right. This is Dan Hansa signing off for MJ Acosta, the mailman, the old boss, and Ricky Hollywood behind the glass. Till next week.